City Council. Thursday, June 6th is now in session. Start our meeting with a moment of silence and the Pledge of Allegiance, led tonight by Kara Manser.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Michelle, would you call the roll, please?
Councilperson Aller.
Present.
Councilperson Azar.
Present.
Councilperson Crossan.
Present.
Councilperson DeBon.
Here.
Councilperson Elliott.
Here.
Councilperson Garrison.
Here.
Councilperson Morris.
Here.
Councilperson Nasser.
Present.
Councilperson Nation.
Here.
All are present.
Thank you. Just for the public's interest, if you don't know, there are copies of our agenda up here on the pew, and you're welcome to come up and take one. We do start our meeting with 30 minutes of comment on non-agenda items. If you are here to speak on a non-agenda item, please come to the podium, state your name and address, and make your comments. We do ask that you keep those comments to 3 minutes or less so that we can accommodate everyone and also so that we are mindful of those people who come later down in our agenda. We do have a long agenda tonight, and while we want everyone to have a chance to have their say, we also want to move through it. So thank you very much.
My name is Donald Wayne Hyde. I live at 1411 Poplar Street. I thought this time, since the last time I came, I have a hard time coming up with something to talk about. And then the news gave me the reason to talk. Apparently, the elections happened and the primaries are over. It was reported that less than 13% of the registered voters voted. And then somebody came on that was working for the city. Don't know who he is. I don't care. But he made an interesting comment. He said, well, the fact that only less than 13% of the citizens bothered to vote must mean they're happy with our government. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that for two reasons. The big reason is the problem you have and remain having. Right now, I see no evidence. I see a little work done here and there of dealing with the apathy. But the proof is it's still there in huge numbers. Bible County School Board had a meeting Monday. It was reported on the news that he talked for two and a half hours with themselves. And the news media also said that not one member of the public showed up. Now, mind you, the Bible County School Corporation is getting ready to bid for the building or renovation, and I believe it will be renovation of two high schools and building of one whole new high school. Any way you look at it, it's going to cost the taxpayers of this county, and everybody's going to pay some degree of taxes to it, almost $300 million for that project alone. And yet nobody bothered to show up. Nobody bothered to say, hey, I'm interested in better schools, and here's my idea. Oh, why can't we do this? And where are we going to build them? Actually, That question's already been answered. They're going to build north and south where north and south sits. They're going to build West Vigo where West Vigo sits. Now, not exactly where it sits, because West Vigo has enough land. You could hold West Vigo High School and middle school all day long, no problem for the entire construction of the new West Vigo High School, because they got plenty of land to the east of their property. Plenty of land to build that high school, no problem. But when it comes to north and when it comes to south, you're going to have to do one of two things. You're either going to have to build one in 1 year and build the second one in the second year. Let's say we build south first. Well, we're going to have to build south, and they're going to have to build it where the playground, the football field, and all that is. Therefore, for a year or two, they're not going to be able to play any home games there. So you play the home games at north. Then when north is being built, it switches. All the north home games would be played at south. Now, that's the common sense answer. I do not know what they're going to do. But that would be the easiest and cheapest thing to do. and the smartest thing to do. Yet nobody showed up to even mention that? No, no. Your problem is apathy. I don't know what your answer is, guys, but I know this much. You've got to work on the apathy of the voters of this county. Not just the voters, but the taxpayers. You've got to make an effort. Now, the reason I say this year is more actually important this year than next year. This year is the election of local offices. This is when the city council gets elected. This is when the county council gets elected. This is when you elect the mayor. In other words, if a Democrat or Republican party wants to make a difference in local politics, this is the year to do it. And the number one thing you should be doing is getting people riled up to go and vote. And I don't mean riled up in a bad way. I mean get them wanting to go vote, to participate in the system. Next year, it's going to be Congress. It's going to be the president. We're going to be, we'll be lucky if we're heard. That's what I'm saying. But I don't know what the answer is. I know this much. In the last two generations, from 1980 to 2020, next year, we have spent two generations dumb-downing our American institutions. We're not voting, and we don't seem to care about it. We're not studying history anymore. In 1980, history was one of the core curriculums in elementary school, junior high, and high school. And in college, you had to get so many hours to get a degree in anything.
Mr. Hyde, could you please wrap up?
All right, I'm wrapping up. This is my final point. We've gotten away from that. And right now, we're very close to losing some fundamental democracy problems. But we can change it by simply getting people to start showing up and voting. Thank you.
Are there any other comments from the public on non-agenda items? Okay, if there are not, we will move forward. Any corrections to the journal?
There are none.
Communications from the mayor?
I was contacted by the mayor this afternoon to report to this council the January 2019 financial reports will be distributed tomorrow, and they hope to have them distributed to you before noon.
Okay. Thank you. Reports from any other city officials?
I did not receive any.
Okay. Reports from the Board of Public Works and Safety?
I did not receive any.
Any reports from standing committees? I don't believe we have any non-standing committees at the current time meeting, so we would have any reports there. Next item on the agenda, please.
Council President Crossan, did you want to go ahead and go into Welltower?
Yes.
Okay. Well, review of Welltower Element CF1 Resolution 22-2012. If the council remembers last month, the council started reviewing it and there was some information missing. The council asked that I contact the company to have them submit a new form. There is a copy of the new form in front of you. After speaking with City Attorney Eddie Felling, and I will let him explain the necessary steps between the two different forms.
I'm not sure we've received the new form.
The new form should have been towards the top, not in the bottom. We were keeping
okay.
Oh, wait, did you hand that out?
No.
I don't think we've gotten it yet.
Hold on one moment. I apologize.
No problem.
While that's being handed out, I would request that the board or that the council take action on the original document. Since there's been a new one that's been filed, I would request that someone make a motion to withdraw the original CF1 that was submitted. So that way we have something formally on the record for the two separate documents.
Do I hear a motion to withdraw?
Madam President, I move that we withdraw the document that Eddie referred to. Is that Welltower 8402.
That was the one filed May 2nd, I believe.
Resolution 22-2012. Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Garrison that we withdraw the original CF1 filed by Welltower. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
So this will be the review of the CF1 form filed June 5th, 2019. The assessed value is now listed, and they originally estimated, they currently have more employees than they originally estimated. As a reminder to the council, your actions will be a motion for in substantial compliance or a motion for not in substantial compliance.
Does anyone have any questions about the new compliance document?
Madam President.
Yes.
I make a motion that we find Resolution 22-2012 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nassar and seconded by Councilperson, Vaughn, that we find that the compliance form from Welltower is in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? In compliance. Next item on the agenda, please.
Resolution 1-2019 designating an area commonly identified as 200 South 6th Street, Terre Haute, Indiana, as economic revitalization area for the purpose of a 10-year real property tax abatement, 200 South 6th LLC. This is for confirmation.
Is there anyone from the petitioner who would like to speak?
Madam President, fellow members of the board, my name is Richard Shagley. I'm the attorney with Wright, Shagley & Lowry, and tonight I'm here representing the petitioner 200 South 6th LLC. I think we're all fairly familiar with this project from last meeting. Just a quick overview. This the proposal is to renovate the current YMCA that's been vacant for 13 years and turn it into 34 units, 4 one-bedroom, 19 two-bedroom, and 11 three-bedroom. And then to build a building that has 6 three-bedroom townhouses in it at the corner of 6th and Poplar. This is a project that has several moving parts, as we discussed last month, the tax abatement as well as the tax credits. And this is a deal where kind of all the pieces have to fit in the puzzle perfectly for it to work, and this is one of those pieces. To this point, this project has received support through the, let me get all the initials correct, the IHCDA, which awards the tax credits. The Board of Public Works approved the agreement between the parties. I believe the Landmarks, Indiana Landmarks, is supportive of this project. Archivago County supported this project, and as well as we had a couple variances that were necessary, and those were approved by the Board of Zoning Appeals. So up to this point, we've been very successful in telling our story and receiving acceptance at every stage. As you may recall, a few questions came up last month. Some of the major talking points were the assessed values that were used, the proposed estimates, I guess, some of the vendor issues, and then there was also a question of the importance of the tax abatement to the tax credit process. Since the meeting, I've heard some issues regarding some of the complaints of some people in the area. We'll address those, but as far as the assessed values go, I want to thank Councilman Elliott and Councilman Aller. We've been exchanging a lot of communications, and I appreciate Councilman Aller's willingness to review the information. And I'd like to thank Councilman Elliott for taking time to meet with Don Pruitt, the Harrison Township Assessor, to go over and try to more fully discuss and understand the assessment of this property. And I hope we did that, and again, I want to thank them for that. But Tonight I have with me Kevin McDonald. He's the vice president with Commonwealth Development, which is going to be developing this project. He's here tonight to also go over some things. So as far as the assessed value, I think as far as the two major questioners, which was Councilman Aller and Early, I think we've hopefully addressed some of those. As far as the vendors go, it is the petitioner's intention to open this up to bid for anyone to bid on. I provided a list last time where they've already reached out to several of the local vendors, B&S Plumbing and Crown Electric for their specialty, as well as Lowe Brothers for the roofing. And Lowe Brothers has actually been out there recently. Apparently, roofs don't get newer on older buildings. So they've been already out there doing some work to protect the structure. And then I also provided via email, and I believe you all received a letter from the IHCDA, which unfortunately it wasn't as much detail as I'd hoped they would have provided. But the gist of it is that the application as submitted needs to stay in its current form through the process. And as I mentioned last month, similar to the city's application for a tax abatement, you have to meet certain requirements. The petitioner worked under the assumption and hopes of getting a 10-year tax abatement, which created a situation where they maximized the points available and through a very competitive process was one of the few entities awarded tax credits for this year. So that being said, if you have any questions of me at this time, I'd be happy to answer them. If not, I'd like to introduce you to Kevin and let him tell you some more information.
I'd suggest we have Kevin go ahead if that's agreeable with everyone. And
subtle, but I like that.
Get the whole story.
There we go.
Thanks, Richard. So as Richard said, Vice President of Development for the Commonwealth Companies. Thanks for having me tonight. So the Commonwealth Companies were a developer, property management company, and general contractor. And we worked nationally. We were actually recently ranked the number 7 ranked affordable housing developer in the country by Affordable Housing Magazine. So something we're very proud of hopefully speaks to the quality of the projects that we do. So we have a big focus on preservation of affordable housing, historic preservation like this project, and new construction on greenfields and brownfield apartment projects. My focus is on Indiana and Wisconsin, and to date we've developed about 100 projects, making up a total of just under 6,000 units across the country. So next, I guess I'd just like to touch a little bit on the rental housing tax credit and how they work. I know you guys have some familiarity. I think last year the Miller-Parrott project that the Sisters of Providence is moving forward on came forward for a similar tax abatement, and their project, that, from my understanding, is financed very similarly with the historic tax credits and the rental housing tax credits. So I won't go into all the details, but so basically how the rental tax credit works is typically the rental housing tax credits are sold to an equity investor. In this case, our investor is going to be Old National Bank. That equity comes into the project and typically pays for about 70% of the total project cost. That 70% of the equity allows the project to take out a smaller mortgage, first mortgage on the project, and in turn promise affordable rents throughout the 30-year affordability compliance period. And then typically there's some other grant sources and other city financing that makes up the balance of the gap for the for the funding for the projects. So as I mentioned, Old National is going to be our investor on this project, purchasing the tax credits. They're also going to be the lender providing the construction and first mortgage for the project. So you know, in summary, what the tax credits do is allow us to provide a really high-quality apartment project while keeping the rents affordable for the community's workforce and seniors that live in the community. We typically find that about 25% of our residents are seniors in projects like this, and then the remaining is comes from the community's workforce and families. The next thing that we've heard some questions on is what happens with property taxes, and that's a common question that we do here. There's been a lot of studies out there done. There's a good white paper out there that Novogradac put out that kind of summarizes a lot of the different studies. And basically the conclusion is, especially in areas like this, where you're working on a blighted neighborhood and a vacant building, the conclusion has come back that it increases property values often to the tune of about $1 million spinoff to the surrounding properties. I believe that's in about a half-mile radius, and a decrease in crime. So an important factor that comes in, we have a lot of equity coming in from the banks. So they are tracking us. They want to make sure we're they're reviewing every resident application that comes in, and they're making sure we're doing our due diligence. And we obviously want to make sure we're doing our due diligence because we're in these properties for the long term. So we do full financial and criminal background checks. Residents are required to make 2.5 times the rent in order to afford to live into the unit. And then I guess the next thing that we've heard from some of the local student housing landlords was that they were concerned that we'd be renting to students and competing with them. That is not true. There's a full-time student housing rule that goes along with the rental housing tax credit program, and we are not allowed to rent to student or households that are made up of just students. So that should not be a concern. So who will live in the project? So brief summary on kind of income levels that are set aside for the project. So we have 10 units out of the 40 that are set aside for 30% of the county median income. Those units, we have a preference for those units for clients of the Arco Vigo County, and so we're working with their clients that typically have some type of disability and utilize their services to make sure that they can live be as self-sufficient as possible and provide them with the support they need. We have another 10 units that are at 50% of the county median income, and then the remaining 20 are at the 80% of the county median income. So for reference, the county median income for a household in Vigo County is about $61,000, and our average rents are projected to be about $680. Example residents that are living in the community and would qualify to live in the affordable units are a retail store manager, restaurant server, a medical assistant working at the clinic across the street, a hairdresser, teachers. There are a lot of projects, especially in California, that are specifically just targeting teachers for these types of projects. And, of course, the majority of the community seniors will also qualify to live in the units. The project will also have significant local ties, starting with our site superintendent, who is from Terre Haute, and will, of course, be motivated to work with the local subcontractors that he already knows. And we're reaching out to a lot of new ones as well. As Richard said, we're already working with Lowe Brothers to repair the roof, and they'll be looking to do the full project as well. We're working with Old National, as previously mentioned. We're going to be hiring a local property manager, hiring a local maintenance. And finally, I guess we always like to highlight that we're a long-term owner in the projects that we've developed. We've been around since 2001 and never sold a project that we've developed. So we're want to be a long-term partner with the community. We want to have a project that we can be proud of, so when we come into another community like Terre Haute, we can point to it and say, look at what we did in Terre Haute. Please come by and see it. And I offer that. You can look on our website, commonwealthco.net, and if there's any projects that you want to see, we've done a project in Muncie that just completed, Elkhart, Columbia City, and Warsaw are the projects that we've completed in Indiana. We'd love to have any of you come visit them anytime, because I can sit up here and talk, but you won't believe it until you see it. So I guess with that, if you have any questions for me, I'd love to answer them.
Thank you. Are there any questions before we go to public comment?
I'd soon hear from the public, and then, then we'd be able to...
Okay. If there's anyone from the public who wants to talk on this, please come to the microphone, state your name and address, and...
real quick, and first of all, let me clarify something from the beginning. I'm for the project. I like seeing the history of Vigo County preserved when it can be preserved. With that said, I want to remind the City Council that you have something to compare this project with that's already built, already in existence. And I challenge the people that just talked to match that project. Now I'm talking about the Warren School project, where they made low-cost housing. They kept the school intact. In fact, they did something that I was told by the school board couldn't be done. They couldn't save the Warren School. They couldn't remodel it. They couldn't bring it back. I went by there after they were done, looked at the Warren School project, looked at the Warren School inside and out. And they made the school new. Now, the YMCA has several things that the community had used since it opened in 1939. And I'm hoping that this group will save at least one key part of that YMCA and somehow come up with a way to utilize it to help the handicapped people they're going to rent to, and maybe even make it possible, like the Y could do, and has hallways and already built and construction done, where people could get to the pool. And if they truly redone the YMCA and a couple of key areas that would help the people, help them rent out the places, but also save one very valuable resource of this community, and that would go a long way to getting the public support, and a long way of filling up that building when they get it built. And like I said, we the public have something to compare their work to that already exists. I'm going to be comparing it to how well Warren was done, and hopefully the YMCA will be done just as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public?
Hello, my name is Wendy Bennett, and I am the managing partner of Sharp Flats LLC, which is a family-owned partnership, which is, well, we've been doing this for over 30 years, and we rent mainly to college students. Now our college students, most of them are full-time college students, but we do have some part-time college students that also have jobs, or they have some roommates who are not college students, which would obviously compete with the same market. Anyway, aside from that, you know, I understand that the Y is a building that is worth saving, and I totally understand with the saving old houses. I mean, I have 29 properties in Farrington Grove that we have painstakingly repaired, and several of them were condemned. But what I do object to is the tax abatement. I think it's unfair. I think that it's an unfair playing field for us, and we chose to invest in this community, and it's a slap in the face to give out of town or people who are competing with us an unfair advantage. We carry a lot of the burden of the taxes. There are a lot of places that don't pay taxes. And as Amy knows from working in the assessor's office, we pay 2% of the assessed value of our houses. And then we're going to have to pay for another 0.8% probably for the school tax. Meanwhile, there have been tons of new properties, and I understand you have to be competitive, but our market is slowly dwindling, and this is just another something else that we're going to have to deal with. So I just don't think it's fair. And I ask you not to approve the abatement. The program is fine. The abatement is not.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the public who would like to make a comment?
Good evening, Madam President, members of the Council. My name is Tommy Kleckner. I'm Director of the Western Regional Office for Indiana Landmarks. The Western Regional Office is located at 669 Ohio Street. Indiana Landmarks is in support of the Commonwealth Company's proposed redevelopment of the YMCA building, also supportive of the requested abatement to ensure that project moves forward. Indiana Landmarks, we work to revitalize communities, reconnect us to our heritage, and save meaningful places. The proposed project would bring that about, all of those, with the preservation, rehabilitation, and reuse of the YMCA building. In 2017, seeing the continued deterioration of the vacant YMCA building and recognizing its significance to the architectural and social heritage of Terre Haute in the Wabash Valley, Indiana Landmarks included the YMCA building on our 10 most endangered properties list. The intention for doing so was to bring awareness of the plight of the building, the endangerment of demolition by neglect, but also to hopefully get word out that this was a building available for redevelopment. And it was through that that the Commonwealth companies became aware of the property. That was exactly what we would hope would happen. The building is unique in its construction. It was obviously use-specific, and so any reuse becomes a bit more challenging. So trying to identify a qualified, experienced developer who could bring about a creative solution to reuse and also work to pair the various tax credits, the Federal Historic Rehabilitation Tax Credit, the Rental Housing Tax Credit, other components that go into a project of this size. Fortunately, the Commonwealth companies began to investigate and pursued the project. First time applying for those rental housing tax credits, did not make it. In this case, second time was a charm, fortunately, and they were awarded the rental housing tax credits. The building has been vacant, as they said, for over 10 years now, on the 6th Street corridor in a transitional area that is basically seen the demolition of the historic resources, many of those for surface parking. The proposed redevelopment would not only see the historic building redeveloped, brought back into use, but also in a way that's going to preserve the historic character of the building. The historic rehab tax credits ensures that will be done. But the infill construction that is part of this project, the six row house, the six townhouses, the row house development, that type of infill, there's a precedent actually for row houses in that area. They're all surface parking now. So to see a sympathetic infill, I hope, will serve as a catalyst for additional development within that transitional area along Walnut and Poplar. The other aspect of this that Indiana Landmarks is supportive of is adding to the quality affordable housing options available to those qualified low to moderate income residents of Terre Haute in the Wabash Valley. The project, located essentially within the downtown area, the Thrive 2025 plan, comprehensive plan in neighborhood development and redevelopment, states the goal for neighborhood development is to preserve and improve the existing residential areas, provide a variety of housing choices, and improve the quality of life in established neighborhoods while maximizing the potential of vacant commercial industrial buildings. I consider downtown to be a neighborhood. As the city and developers and property owners continue to add housing units, with more people living there, it becomes more neighborhood than just a central business district. The Thrive 2025 comprehensive plan basically charges the city with pursuing additional housing, improving the variety of housing, and this project brings more diversity to the downtown housing options. The housing projects that we've seen in the last 5 to 10 years, the Deming, Ellis Place, Highland Quarters, the Annex, Riverfront Lofts, great projects. I was disappointed with a few of those because we lost National Register listed historic buildings in their place. But those have added significantly to the number of residential units within the downtown area. But those are, for the most part, market rate or student market rate housing. The need for the affordable housing to encourage a diversity in housing options is something that this project brings. Also within the Thrive 2025 Comprehensive Plan, the recommended actions under neighborhood development use a historic architecture strategy to move downtown development forward. I'm going to say that that's sort of a mediocre performance to date, but this project certainly helps the city move forward in encouraging more reuse of existing historic structures. The design of this building architecturally unique, interesting. It's a great building designed by the firm that designed the building we're in today. The opportunity to see a vacant building redeveloped. Vacant and abandoned properties right now are a big issue, not just in Terre Haute, but throughout the state. It's somewhat a result of the housing crisis and the foreclosure crisis. In this case, we have a former YMCA building that's been waiting for that type of unique development, and this project offers that. The property tax abatement, I'll acknowledge. I understand it's still a controversial type of economic development tool, but it is still a tool available to city council, to the city. The city's used that effectively in the past to bring about development, millions of dollars of development, and in downtown, even some of those being housing projects. So I understand Ms. Bennett's issue with this seeming to be an unfair playing field when a developer coming in with this size of project is offered up tax abatement and local rental property owners are not. To that, I encourage the city to look at pursuing local incentives to continue to encourage, incentivize investment within existing historic properties. I encourage, you know, there's some qualifiers. I encourage you looking at existing historic neighborhoods, the Farrington's Grove neighborhood, Collett Park, 12 Points neighborhood could definitely benefit from additional incentives. But as you pursue those, I urge you not to allow this project to disappear. There's a great opportunity to see millions of dollars of investment within this in the downtown. I encourage you to take that into consideration. Again, Indiana Landmarks is in support of this, and we hope to see the building in several years occupied and vibrant. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from the public? Seeing no one headed to the microphone, I'll go into council now. Any comments or questions from council members?
Richard, one of the questions that I was thinking about, you know, this last few weeks when this came before us was the process involved with the tax abatement and the federal tax credits. Does it have to be a 10-year tax abatement?
When they applied with the 10-year, and their application is for the 10-year.
Why did they apply for a 10-year, not a 8-year?
Just like when you, anytime you fill an application, you want to maximize the points available, and that's what they did to try to make themselves appear and to more qualified. And to, like I mentioned earlier, this is a very competitive process. I was actually looking at the list today, and I was shocked by the amount of applications, the amount of entities that are rejected in projects all over the state. And it just, I think part of it is they want to see that local involvement and support of a project. Make sure that everybody has a little skin in the game. And, you know,
excuse me, Richard, can you just say who you mean by they?
Well, I think the entity that provides the tax credits.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry about that. And I think, you know, I've sat through a few of these meetings and tax abatement hearings, and I can't think of a one that's has smaller numbers than these. And it's not a significant amount of taxes we're talking about, but it's a significant part of the puzzle to get the tax credits into this project.
I guess I still don't understand. Is part of the puzzle a tax abatement or a 10-year tax abatement?
We work very closely with the Economic Development Group and how to put together the package to make sure we can maximize the points. And so we looked at home funds. Home funds weren't available. So then we went down the tax abatement route, and that was the letter that we received was the number based on a 10-year abatement. So that letter was included in the application, and that's what Indiana Housing and Community Development Authority gave us points for.
For a 10-year or for an abatement?
For 10-year. It says 10 years in the abatement. I mean, in the letter.
The reason why I have such reservations and why I voted no last month was I wasn't comfortable with the fact that we gave bonus points just for the sake of giving bonus points, that I don't want a precedent to be set that we just give bonus points for the sake of giving a 10-year tax abatement. So what can I... How can I tell my constituents that we're not going to open up a Pandora's box by doing that?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would just say to that you know, I think there were bonus points on the that were utilized in the same fashion on the Miller Parrott project, and that was used. So we utilized that model, and that's kind of we went off of that precedent. So that's the only experience I have and the only thing I've known that's happened here. So that's all I can speak to. I do think this is a really special project. This building has been vacant. It's on the 10 most endangered list. This is an area that really needs the investment.
I think that argument could have been made, 5-10 years ago, but I think with the convention center and other development that's coming downtown, that could or could not be, stated factually. I mean, one of the things that I'm looking at here as well is you listed other communities that you've done this in. I know you said Warsaw. Well, where else did you say that you did these in? In Indiana?
Warsaw.
You know what the median household income is for that community?
It's probably above what it is here.
Okay.
Warsaw is the orthopedic capital of the world. So okay. Zimmer Biomet has a big presence there.
Okay.
I don't know it off hand. I look at too many income numbers to.
And then one of the things you had mentioned, and I didn't know where your source was for this, with the blighted neighborhood, you said that it was going to increase the value by $1 million. Did I hear you correctly on that?
Yeah, so there's been studies done that similar projects that have about a $10 million investment typically in a tax credit project.
Do you have a source on that?
There is a Novogradic white paper that references a bunch of studies. I can send you that.
And then last thing, you said you're doing repairs on the property already. Do you have a purchase agreement? Is it in your Commonwealth's hands now?
So we have a purchase agreement with the LLC right now. And so technically we're in the LLC, but we don't take control of the LLC. It's complicated because of the way the historic tax credits work. And when tax reform happened, in order to preserve the one-year historic tax credit, it moved to a five-year, which basically devalues the historic tax credits at try not to bore you guys with the details, but we had to enter the LLC at the end of 2017. So we're in the LLC currently, and when basically our purchase agreement has always been there, and it's operating as though our purchase agreement is still there, as soon as we can close and start construction with Old National, then we will take over 100%. Well, technically, Old National kind of is the 99.99% owner. Again, legal technicalities. We have control of operating the project. If we violate covenants with Old National. They can kick us out, but on the 100 or so projects that we've done, that's never happened. So.
And then last question. Whenever these tax abatements come before us, one of the big questions that I always ask myself and ask the petitioner is, if you guys don't get a tax abatement, will the project die?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we have shown in the
application. What if we were to amend it to a 8-year, would it die?
It's possible IHCDA would let us come back if there was something making up for the difference. So they would look at you come through with what you had shown as commitments from the city. So I can't say for certain if there was if it was approved at an 8-year, and then there was something that the city would do to make up for the difference, we could present that to them and say, does this still pass?
Like what would, I know the redevelopment's given $500,000, so what other makeup would you be referring to?
It could be from home funds. You know, if there are home funds available, it could be for CDBG funds. I'm not familiar with all the sources of funds that the city has available. Something like that.
Thank you, Ayu.
Any other questions or comments?
Madam President?
Yes.
Carol, I hadn't really focused on the bonus points until now. But when I look at the scoring system that's in the packet they gave us, I see that they didn't just make up bonus points. Bonus points are awarded for things like contractors licensed to do business in Vigo County. There's one there. Materials and supplies from Vigo County vendors, one there. An existing facility, one there. And a mentoring and intern program, one there. So if we were going to open a Pandora's box by awarding bonus points, I don't think that it's a Pandora's box if it's part of the paperwork that anybody can claim these points. Please respond.
I'm referring to the bottom where it says petitioners included bonus points in this figure based on the unique nature of the historic building that has been a blight on the community for a significant number of years, and the project would preserve the significantly deteriorated property. That's what I'm referring to.
But you see the area right above where each one is a point that they can get if they say that they're going to do these things, and that's what they say they're going to do. 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, it's 4, and then that gets them to where they want to be. Do you understand what I'm pointing out?
I do.
And am I not seeing something? I mean, you made it sound like they just made this up and
just at the bottom of the bonus points, quote, and in quotes, it makes it seem like that, you know, anybody can give bonus points to a project.
Well, as Mr. McConnell pointed out, the council has had this kind of a project in front of us before with the old Lighthouse Mission, which we're calling the Miller-Parrott Building since its historic name. And when that came before us last year, I think, they availed themselves of the same tax credit program. They also represented that they would be asking for a tax abatement from the city council. And that went into their application through this very competitive program. And they were able to get not only the tax abatement, but also the tax credits. And that's going to be, that building will be redone here soon as a, the numbers are bigger, but a 42 one-bedroom apartment building plus 12 two-bedroom apartments. That's an $11.7 million project. And to me, it is a good comparison to this project. It's an historic building that would cost a lot to tear down, and anything likely to go there would probably be significantly smaller and bring less to the community. And I remember that was a love fest, you know. It flew through. You voted for it. I voted for it. Everybody voted for it.
Well, that property wasn't collecting any property tax at the time as it was a nonprofit, so it was an exempt property. So it's not comparing apples to apples. That property currently collects $26,000 in property taxes at the old YMCA building.
That's a good point, and one that I had not really thought of. I'm more focused on using what we've got, recognizing what's significant within the community, and trying to keep it. To that point, I'd just like to conclude my comments with a thank you to Mr. McConnell and Commonwealth for the important work you do. We've been lucky here in Terre Haute to attract outside investment that came and took care of the Deming for us. They came and took care of the old Icon building, the American Can building. And these buildings are now reborn as residential housing. Each one of them has required action from this council, and each of the actions that we've taken have been different, tailored to the specific project. So it's really hard to get an apples-to-apples comparison across all these projects, because each one of them, when the developer approaches us, they come with a different set of needs. But the overarching goal is to bring these things back into use, have them filled with life, and become part of the downtown housing mix. And that's what I want to thank Mr. McConnell and Commonwealth for trying to do here, because that's, to me, the main point of all this, is that this building does have a chance to be reborn after over a decade of vacancy as 40 units of housing. Now, I'll stop. I know you guys don't want to be lectured by me.
Councilwoman Oliver.
Just real quick. Michelle, would you have a copy of the Miller-Parrott abatement forms? I don't have one in mind. I didn't know if you had any on hand.
I can go grab one real quick.
Thank you. Theo.
Okay. Mr. Shadley, did you want to respond to something?
Yeah, if I could just make a comment. To Councilman Nation, and I brought this up at the last meeting. Those projects that he listed, I think, in my opinion, are very valuable to our community and trying to bring back our downtown. And I can't say I know 100%, but most of those developers walked through this building and passed. This building's been sitting empty for 13 years and has only been looked over. And it's going to take all these tools, I think, to make it work. Is it the best use? In 13 years, we haven't had anybody look at another use. It's only been passed over. And I think that's important to take in consideration, is we're thankful that Commonwealth saw something in this project that the others didn't. Or this would just be another building that sits vacant. Our downtown is changing. This piece, as I stated, has been passed over. There's a vacant lot at 4th and Ohio that used to house a Long John Silver's. That's been on the market for 5 years. Openly, and hasn't done anything. I was hoping for that McAllister's to go there, but you don't always get everything you want. But there is other opportunities, and this is a great project for this building. And I hope you see the value in what Commonwealth's trying to do, and you grant the 10-year tax credit.
Other comments from council?
Yep. The 2018 taxes payable 2019 on this property are about $31,500, according to the Beacon reports that I have. So, Mr. McDonald, what are your current thoughts on what the taxes would be before and after abatement, and how is that computed? And is a detailed calculation available today?
Yeah, and I, Earl, I think you were provided with some of that, but so basically the calculation equates to, we're thinking right now it's about $34,000 is the taxes that would it would generate. And I know we walked through how the, with the rental housing tax credits, the state of Indiana has a rule that it's either taxed based on the income approach or it's 5% of whatever it is, which it never ends up being. It's basically always the income approach. So it's based on the income approach. I mean, I think our estimates are conservative, so I'd expect it to maybe be a little higher, but you know, as I mentioned to you, we'd rather come in and under-promise and over-deliver. You know, the original calculation that was done based on the cost approach, that was completely inaccurate.
So how did we get at $34,000?
So the $34,000 is, well, based off of, I think I have the, 34,000. I've got the actual calculation. It's based on the projected income minus expenses. You come to the net operating income and you take a cap rate to come up with the value, which is about the 1.1 million, and then 1.1 million times the tax rate gives you what the taxes would be, which it comes to, I think, a number of 46,000, but then there's the circuit breaker tax that's in Indiana that drops it to 34,000.
Okay. Well, I think that's the calculation that looks like we were provided last month. And in that calculation, you used a real estate tax expense of $46,905 was used to calculate the NOI.
Correct.
So if you use $46,905 to calculate the NOI, why can't you pay $46,905?
Because it's based on what the Indiana regulations are, which includes the circuit breaker.
Change the calculation to reflect the lower amount of tax, which raises the NOI and then raises the tax. I mean, it's basically a simultaneous equation to calculate both those amounts at the same time.
Correct.
But it would be a higher number if you used a lower tax.
Yeah, it would be.
Right?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The 34,000 is conservative. I'm showing you something. So it would likely be higher.
Okay.
Because that would increase.
Okay. Let me go on. Steve Witt sent that letter to you that referred to 10-year tax abatement.
Correct.
Okay. Now, in that letter, he has total estimated local property taxes without abatement of $1,106,000, estimated local property taxes with abatement $558,748, which would be $55,875 a year, and then estimated savings with a 10-year property abatement $547,682. So, what did you think of those amounts when you got that and you ran your numbers and all of a sudden your numbers were a lot lower?
So, yeah, I mentioned that to Steve, and he said that I think he provided an email to you explaining how the calculation was derived. I think Baker Tilly put that calculation, and I told him when the letter was provided that we'd be based on the income approach.
But we
I thought his number was high.
This group didn't see this till last month. Steve's letter.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I mean, we did not see it.
Yeah, and I understand that. That's I had nothing to do with
that's
that.
That's a lot higher number than what you think the numbers are going to be that we.
Yeah, and I think Don was in agreement with the calculation.
And after I left Mr. Pruitt's office, I went to Mr. Gardner's office and talked to him. Talked through it, this same thing with him, and he sees something that might indicate it could be even lower. And I'm not going to disclose what that is, but when I went through the calculation that, we just talked about, he sees something that could indicate it'd be lower if his office did the income approach calculation. So I didn't do myself any favors there.
Okay.
May not be doing any telling you.
Well, I know.
You know, that's what he said.
I know it won't be lower. I can guarantee you that.
So what can the project afford to pay?
The project can afford to pay what the income approach produces. That's why the state of Indiana has the law in place.
Okay, but if the income approach produced $84,353 with $46,905, is that an acceptable result for you guys under the income approach?
If yeah. That's what it ends up producing, that means our rents are higher, and then it would prove out. That's why.
Okay, so
these are all based on the current estimates.
So then could you make a payment in lieu of taxes to get us up to $46,905 per year?
No, it has to be done based on the income approach.
Can you make a voluntary payment in lieu of taxes to get us up to $46,905 a year, which is the number you used in your calculation?
No, because the numbers show that the abatement.
You're saying you are not interested in making any voluntary payment in lieu of taxes to raise the revenue that this city gets from this project.
The way that it works is the project can only afford what the project can afford, so we can't promise to. Usually a payment in lieu of taxes is made for a lower amount than what the project can support.
You did this calculation, this NOI calculation, with $46,905, and you came to NOI of $84,353. What's your required NOI for this to make sense, for this project to make sense? Is $84,353 acceptable?
Yeah, this calculation is showing you the base, and then everything else in everything you've seen shows the circuit breaker, which is reflected in the cash flow numbers that isn't in this. This is a very simple property tax calculation that doesn't have everything.
Okay. So you're saying the project cannot afford any more taxes than what our assessor will calculate under the income approach following the law in the state of Indiana?
Correct.
No voluntary payment to get us up to a level?
I have never seen that on any affordable housing project I've ever worked on. No,
but
I don't think it would be feasible.
We're talking about a valuable piece of land, okay? You know, Richard, you commented about, you know, how long it's been vacant and the number of developers that went through that.
13 years.
How about the Terre Haute House? How many developers you think went through that over all the years? And now look where we're at over in that section of the city. I'm pretty proud of everything that's happened.
Absolutely.
Happened over there, and I think it could happen. The same thing could happen on that property.
But there took a lot of extra outside sources to make that project work.
Well,
that wasn't just a private investment where people dumped $20 million into it. There were a lot of pieces of that puzzle to make that work.
But it happened.
Correct.
Now, I don't suppose, you know, your company works for free. Does this for free? I presume there's developer fees, syndication fees, project fees, something. Somehow you guys get money out of this for doing this.
Yes, we do make a developer fee.
Pardon?
Yes, we do make a developer fee.
And what percent is that?
Right now it's projected to be, I think the percentage is probably about 6%.
6% on.
So the number right now that's projected to be paid at conversion when the permanent financing all comes in from Old National, the number is somewhere around $450,000.
The developer fee?
Yes.
Okay. So that works okay, I presume, or you wouldn't be here.
Well, to be honest, that's we're really stretching on that one. Most of the time, that number is much larger.
Yeah. Okay.
So we've got a lot of money already invested. We've got hundreds of thousands of dollars already invested in this that we're at risk for.
Some of the other things that we've already touched on is, I agree that scoring system use was extremely aggressive, and I don't want to go back through that and go over it, but we could. I'm not sure where we're going to end up on the use of local contractors. As I commented last month, there weren't many 812 phone numbers on that first list that we've got. If they used 46,905 in their income approach calculation to calculate an NOI and were willing to capitalize that and accept the results, I don't know why that amount isn't acceptable to us. Have you found $500,000 of infrastructure need on the project? That, you know, Department of Redevelopment's pledged up to $500,000 for that.
I know we're very close. We're working.
We're having to work really hard to spend the $500,000 for infrastructure. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
To get up to that number.
Yeah, because it's an existing building, so we're able to reuse a lot of infrastructure. Correct.
All right. It's just a large piece of a downtown land that if this goes through, you know, with the tax abatement, you know, we receive very little over the, forever, as long as it's used for that that purpose. And that's the dilemma that I have, not to mention the level playing field and all of those other issues. And with that, I yield.
Any other comments? Questions?
Just a couple of things. You had mentioned that you've done several projects. Are all those projects based on an abatement or tax credits?
No, not all of them received tax abatements. Some we were able to get other financial resources into the project. Some communities have provided home funds in order to get to the number. Some projects were just lucky to be in locations where they scored higher, so we didn't need to get to the full 10% of the project for the 4 points. So some projects might have scored 2 points in financial participation, but made up for it in other categories.
Are all the other projects based on income approach?
Yes.
All of them?
Yes.
Even one with abatements?
Yes, correct. Yep. So we have an abatement on the project in Warsaw. That's an income approach. It's a family.
Can I ask what the income approach is on it?
I know the number is in between $30,000 to $50,000 in taxes.
Based on what was the construction cost?
Most of the construction cost, hard cost, GC contracts, probably somewhere around $6 million, $5.5 million.
Madam President?
Yes.
If there's no further discussion.
I have a question.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure.
When you talk about other sources of income, you're talking about other sources of public income, or when council, when there isn't an abatement, you said you sometimes have not gotten an abatement because there have been other sources of income?
Yeah, so, some communities have facade grants. Some communities might use TIF funds differently. Some have home funds, CDBG.
But other sources of public money.
Yes. Sometimes there are different grants that are available, things like that.
Yeah. I'd just like to say that this is one of those projects that I think we've all, or at least several of us, have felt a lot of conflict about. Those conflicts have been presented by people who have not spoken tonight. You know, we have this historical building that's been sitting empty for 10 years that we, at least I would like to see used for a really good purpose, and I think this is a good purpose. So I understand the frustration of Ms. Bennett and others in her position. We have had other housing, student housing specifically, ask for abatements here in the last several years, and we have denied the one that I remember, which was the annex. There were lots of reasons for that, but one of them was that project was going to go forward with or without that abatement. And this one, that doesn't appear to be true to me, that if this abatement doesn't go, then your tax credit is jeopardized and then the project doesn't go forward. So I think those are all really important issues, and one of the important questions for me was answered by your statement about students going into that property and that full-time students are not, and I want to just verify that, are not allowed.
Yeah, so you cannot have 100% full-time student household cannot live.
Okay, thank you. So I just wanted to say those things before we went to a vote. I think those are important issues, and I will now put it back to council. Yes, Council Nation.
Madam President, if there's no further discussion, I move for approval of Resolution Number 1, 2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and second by Councilperson Gabon. Approval of Resolution 1, 2019. Roll call, please.
Paper ballot, please.
And call for a paper ballot for the audience. That means that we will each get a paper ballot. We will write our vote on that with our name, and the votes will be read with our name, so you will know how we voted.
I apologize, my alphabetizing skills are rusty. Okay, Councilperson Aller voted no. Councilperson Azar voted no. Councilperson Devon voted yes. Councilperson Elliott voted no. Councilperson Garrison voted yes. Councilperson Morris voted no. Councilperson Nasser voted no. Councilperson Nation voted yes. And Council President Crossan voted yes. That is 4 yes and 5 no.
The resolution does not pass.
Thank you very much.
Next item of business, please.
Madam President, before we move on, in conversations that I had with Mr. Pruitt and Mr. Gardner, and comments that we've heard consistently concerning the CF1 forms and the difference between the projected cost of the real estate improvements and then the subsequent lower assessed valuations, suggestions were made that if we grant abatements, the taxpayer foregoes their right to appeal the assessment if we grant the abatement. And it's something I guess we could consider down the road. I mean, that topic came up in both of those discussions that I've had with those folks. And there was one other thought that came up that escapes me, but I'll bring it back when it does come back to me. Thank you.
Thank you. Next item of business, please.
Appropriation for 2019, $496,677.17 from Community Crossing Grant number 0492 to Tom Cross Grant Paving number 432105. I need to apologize to the council. We have to take action on this again because the legal notice had a number transposed, and unfortunately it made the amount lower. If it had made it higher, we could have considered a Scrivener's error.
Okay.
It was Chuck Innes' fault.
Oh.
Chuck's here to talk on this.
Mr. Innes, would you like to defend yourself?
Yes, thank you. It's not my fault. This is our appropriation of our community crossings money. We need to appropriate it down so we can keep spending it. So we did this last month. And I apologize for somebody else's mistake.
I did not blame you.
And for purposes of the public's understanding of this, could you just, this is again money that has been spent that is being reimbursed.
The state reimbursed us this amount of money. It goes into a fund. We need to appropriate this money before we can spend it. But we'll spend it again on paving.
I know you've explained that before, but there may be some new people here tonight, so I appreciate you doing that. Before we go into any discussion about this, we do have to vote on this particular matter because it is here as a first reading. So, Council?
I move we vote to take action on appropriation for 2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Azar, seconded by Councilperson Aller, that we take action on appropriation for 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Any other questions?
Madam President?
Yes.
There's no further questions. I move that we approve appropriation for 2019 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Aller and seconded by Councilperson Garrison that we approve appropriation for 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next item of business.
Appropriation 5, 2019, $5,465 from edit number 0404-0096 to demo of unsafe buildings number 432018.
Petitioner.
Madam President, members of the Council, Phil Kessner with the Department of Redevelopment. This is for reimbursement of a demo lien that was paid out of edit funds that we'd like to have transferred back to the demo line item so they can continue to take care of other problems that the city has.
I apologize to the public on the last matter. I think I failed to ask for any public comment on appropriation 4. So is there any public comment on appropriation 5? Council?
Madam President?
Yes.
If there's no discussion, I move for approval of appropriation number 5, 2019.
Second.
We have to vote, I think, on this first reading. So.
Sorry. I move that we vote to vote. Vote to take action on appropriation number 5, 2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson DeBon, that we take action on appropriation 5, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Any further action somebody would like to take on this matter? You've just voted to vote.
Oh, Madam President. I move that we approve appropriation number 5, 2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and I think seconded by Councilperson Harrison that we approve appropriation 5, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion passes. Thank you, Phil.
Thank you.
Don't leave. Resolution 6, 2019, authorizing the submission of the 2019 Annual Consolidated Plan.
Madam President, members of the Council, Phil Kessner again from the Department of Redevelopment. This resolution is to authorize the submittal of our Housing and Urban Development Block Grant and Home Funds. We didn't see as much reduction this year. We were fortunate in our CDBG funds, but our home dollars have been reduced. We'd like to be able to submit this application and be able to get our funds approved and ready to expend towards the end of this year. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Kessner? First of all, is there any public comment on Resolution 6-2019? Any questions or comments about this resolution? Hearing none.
Well, we have six. I move that we approve Resolution 6-2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Azar and seconded by Councilperson Aller that we approve Resolution 6-2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Resolution passes.
Thank you for your support.
Thank you. Next item of business, please.
Resolution 7-2019, designating an area commonly identified as 4150 East Stilton Avenue, Terre Haute, Indiana, 47805, as an economic revitalization area for the purpose of a 10-year real property tax abatement, Pyrolex USA Indiana LLC Corporation. This is for adoption.
Petitioner.
Jeff Lind, Lind Law Firm, here on our 8th anniversary. Here to represent Pyrolex, and the thing I want to make clear on this resolution and the next is that we are not asking for a vote tonight. Tom Redd, the manager, will be here next week and will be able to answer in much greater detail any questions you might have or give you explanations of where they are, why they're so able to move forward. If they get financing and tax abatement with a second project so quickly. This is a second facility upon the same 9 acres. This, too, would be a 60,000-square-foot manufacturing facility. The anticipated cost of the real property improvements, and that's what we have at issue here in Resolution 7, is expected to be $7 million, anticipated an additional 50 new jobs, anticipated $2.5 million in additional salaries. When you add the benefits afforded those 50 employees combined with the salaries you would they expect, that number to reach $3.8 million annually. And the thing I want to make clear, the numbers you see for the tax abatement effects or by the use of the Hoosier Sites tax abatement calculator on the Hoosier Energy website. It's prepared by the accounting firm that Redevelopment Commission's County Redevelopment Commission uses. And the only inputs they ask for are the cost of the improvements or the personal property, depending on which calculator you're using, and the type of facility. And I inserted the $7 million cost and the manufacturing facility, and then the numbers came right from that calculator. Be happy to take any questions you have tonight.
Is there anyone from the public who would like to comment on Resolution 7-2019?
Oh, sorry.
One question only, Donald Wayne Hyde. For the public at large, not just the people in this room, I would like the gentleman to tell us what they're going to make.
Right. Pyrolux takes shredded tires that the material is brought from off-site. For example, one company is locating up at Vermilion Rise, the old Newport chemical plant. Those shredded tires are treated in a vacuum system. Tom Redd, I'm telling you, will be able to explain the process. But the end result is it separates the materials in the tires. Tires, apparently, are made out of oil and carbon black. This separates the oil from the carbon black. The carbon black
can be delivered to tire manufacturers to make new tires. And the new tires are not like a recycled cup you're going to get, because they're made out of carbon black, which is what any other tire starts with. And the carbon black is also useful in the plastics industry, which is why they were interested in Terre Haute in the first place. And the oil, this is from 2 years ago, my memory. Oil is used in manufacturing processes as lubricant.
Any questions?
Yeah. Jeff, who are the contractors that are working up there on the first plant? Anyway?
Thompson Thrift was a general contractor. Okay. And I'd have to get a hold of Thompson Thrift to find out who all they used. Thompson Thrift was a general contractor on the first project.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, and I guess one thing I would point out as evidence of how this company comes through, if anyone's driven east on Steelton from Fruit Ridge, you can, of course, see the plant. You can see the rail spurs that have been built, ready to go when they're open, the improved crossing of the rail at Steelton. You used to have to stop and crawl, not to cause damage to your car, and smooth as can be.
Is that in a TIF district?
It is, yes. So we will have to get approval from, and we will seek the approval from Terre Haute Redevelopment Commission. They've always been supportive of us in the past, and we would have that for you before final action.
Thank you.
Yes.
So we need to table this till the next meeting.
Well, it's not a matter of tabling it. We just treat it as if it were a sunshine meeting. I would ask that you not vote to take a vote.
We don't have to do that on this anyway.
It's
We either move to approve it or we move to not approve it, correct?
It's a resolution.
Or do we move to table it?
Yeah.
So you can take action.
We can take action tonight on this, or we have to move to table it to the next meeting.
Well, do you want to hear from? Do you have questions that you want to hear from Tom Redd?
Anybody? I move to.
I've got another question.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Yes.
If that's all right.
Yes,
Mr. Major. Jeff, can you speak to the amount of taxes abated in the first year for this project? The resolution that's before us.
On the real property.
Yeah. Resolution 7.
$152,887. And again.
So that's in the first
I've relied on the calculator.
I understand. That's how these estimates are made, right?
Correct.
You don't know what it's going to be. You estimate. It's a 10-year that you've got before us. Can you tell us the amount of total taxes for Resolution 7, 2019, that we're being asked to forego for this community?
$756,791.
So that's for the real property.
That's for the real property.
Before us right now.
Okay, but I will tell you that the first project was assessed January of this year, first time it was assessed, and the RUSA form goes out. And it was much lower. I don't know if it was assessed low because it was not operating yet, but the assessment on the first year of this current facility, not the one we're asking for tonight, was low. So the first year of abated taxes on the first project were not nearly as high as estimated in 2017. I can't speak to why the assessment was so low, other than the project was not yet operational. It was a building with no one working there yet.
Anybody who's here and my fellow council members, if you look at the back of our agenda tonight, you can get an indication of how many property tax abatements or tax abatements the council has awarded over the last less than a decade. I guess I see one that's in 2006. there are all kinds of projects and all kinds of entities that apply to us for this kind of help. I imagine that the amount that we're, since we're being asked to give up $756,000 in 1 year, I'm sorry, in 10 years, $153,000 in the first year for this project, it's not hard for me to imagine that when we review these 16 abatements that we'll be reviewing at the end of this business part of the meeting tonight, we'll be giving up millions of dollars this year in taxes to incentivize projects that we think are important to us, whether they're bringing jobs or getting things done in our districts that we're trying to get done. You think that's a fair representation?
No, I do not. No, because if the project is not done, the abatement is only on the increased assessed value. There is no increased assessed value if, in this case, the $7 million investment is not made. In this case, there is no abatement on new personal property brought to this community if the project does not go forward.
And I'll note that you're right. I mean, and I agree. Don't get me wrong. I'm going to vote for this one just like I vote for almost every abatement request that comes before us, because we really don't have very many tools as a city council that the state allows us to use to try to incentivize different kinds of projects. We've basically got tax abatement, and then we've got things that we can do with TIF district money, and that's about it. So for people who are trying to understand what role the city council has in trying to incentivize things, it's actually very limited, and our bag of tools is very small at this point. And I'll note that over the course of this 10-year tax abatement, yes, we're going to forego $756,791 based on your estimates. But in fairness, your client will also have paid $772,079. So you're paying more than half of the load that would come on were this not given a tax abatement. Is that a fair representation?
That is a fair representation if the project goes forward.
And my point with the list of 16 that we're being asked to review that we've given in the past is simply that when you add all of those up, the amount that we've foregone each year, and they're all on different schedules, we've asked before and tried to get a bead on exactly what that number is in any given year, but it's elusive. We haven't really been able to nail that down. But, again, I'll assert that it is in the millions of dollars a year that we are giving up when we incentivize projects using the tools that are available to us. Jeff, thank you for answering those questions. I'll have similar questions about the next one. I yield.
Councilwoman Ollie.
Jeff, can you tell me off the top of your head how many jobs are being created?
With the second facility?
Yes.
50.
What's the annual salaries?
$2.5 million.
Okay. And this is being assessed as a true tax. There's no other tax incentives other than the abatement?
No, we will. There will be Bruce Donaldson from Barnes & Thornburg here next month. We will ask through redevelopment for a pass-through bond. No obligation to the city, no pledge of city revenues. And no effect on your bonding cap. And that can be fully explained by bond counsel. That's why they get paid the big bucks.
Thank you. I yield.
Councilman.
Yeah. Jeff, the answer to your question, because I just talked about it with someone at our office a week or two ago, that personal property on site, but not yet operating, has assessed at 10%.
right.
of cost. That's
well, that's just by virtue of the personal property tax return you file.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we used a very qualified accountant to help us with that.
I'm aware of that.
Yes. Yeah.
And then personal property, you know, the businesses are responsible for filing those, and the source document generally is their depreciation schedules that they use to depreciate their equipment. And over the years, we've filed returns in other counties, and those counties have hired auditors to have those personal property tax returns checked out. And they've sent us, you know, lists asking for the depreciation schedules and a lot of other records to verify those are accurate. And I think I do remember seeing something in the paper in the last few months where Vigo County is considering that same, you know, auditing process. Because that's a given number. Now, real property, that's a different story because that's, you know, appraised values and, you know, a lot of stuff in state law that tells the assessors how they're supposed to come up with those amounts. I yield.
Anyone else?
And I was just listening to Todd's comments concerning the 16 abatements that we have and this one also. And I did try to go through these very, very quickly and notice that we did give them all abatements, but each and every one of them has a real good salary, a lot of employees. I think that's something else that we need to take into account when we do abatements. It's not just, you know, oh, we want to give them an abatement and they got 10 points. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you have to look at how many jobs they create, how many salaries, and that can help make up for the loss, supposedly loss in tax revenue. So I just want to make that point clear, too.
Councilor Nation?
I'll be sure to look very closely at the one for Guru Krupa through the lens that George is talking about, Resolution 6, 2016, for hotel jobs. I yield.
Any other council questions or comments?
Which one?
I think if we do not want to vote on this tonight, we need to move to table for next week.
That is correct. Madam President, if there be no further discussion, I'll make a movement that we table Resolution 7, 2019, to next week's meeting.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson DeBond, seconded by Councilperson Garrison, that we move to table Resolution 7, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is tabled.
Just to clarify, that was to June 13th.
Yes, June 13th. Thank you. Next item of business.
Resolution 8, 2019, designating an area commonly identified as 4150 East Stilton Avenue, Terre Haute, Indiana, 47805, as an economic revitalization area for the purpose of a 10-year personal property tax abatement, Pyrolex USA, Indiana, LLC Corporation. This is also for adoption.
Jeff Lind, Lind Law Firm, and did I mention this is our 8th anniversary? Today.
Yeah. Eight times.
Today. Yeah. I'm here for Pyrolex on the personal property tax abatement side of the same project. $34 million anticipated cost of new or new to Indiana personal property for the second facility. Again, Tom Redd would be here next week. Now, one thing I do want to note, and sorry, Chuck is left, but we will need to amend and replace the SB1 on the personal property tax return under IT equipment. Anticipated cost of IT equipment is $1.5 million. I correctly listed that in two of the opportunities I had, and in the other two, down at the totals, I added a zero and made it $15 million. It's not $15 million, it's $1.5 million, but I wanted to make clear, if you guys can report back to Chuck Ennis, I owned my mistake. Mm-hmm. If there are no other further questions, I would appreciate a motion to table. I'd like these heard together.
Madam President, you got to ask for a public comment.
Yeah, is there any public comment on Resolution 8-2019? This is the personal property tax request. So. There appear to be no public comments.
Madam President, I move to table Resolution 8, 2019, until next week's meeting of June 13th.
Discussion.
Do we have a second first?
Second.
Okay. It has been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Azar, that we table until June 13th, Resolution 8, 2019. Discussion, Councilperson Nation.
Thanks. Jeff, what's the amount that your client is requesting that we abate for the first year on this one, the personal property?
As Earl noted, if at the date of assessment it is operational, anticipate the first year's abated taxes to be $297,038 with a total over 10 years of $1,044,087 in taxes paid over that 10-year period. If the project proceeds,
by my reading of your paperwork, the 10-year total that you would pay is the $1,044,087 that you, I think you just said.
Correct.
And the amount that we would abate over that same 10-year period?
Pardon me?
Can you tell us the amount that we're being asked to abate over that same year period to not collect?
The calculator says $1,554,991.
So $1,555,000 in this project, or for this real property abatement, and then $756,791 for the real property abatement. Altogether, we're being asked between these two resolutions to abate over the next 10 years, estimated, $2,311,782. Does that sound right?
It is, because the company is willing to invest over $40 million in Terre Haute, Indiana, on the north side.
Creating
50 new jobs, $2.5 million in salary.
Pay an average of $50,000 apiece. That's great. That's why I'm going to vote for it. And I thank Purelex for coming back and deciding to make Terre Haute the capital, the North American center of carbon black reclamation.
There, well, to be clear, Pyrolux is, yes, the center of there. And something else I want to clarify when Tom Red's here, they may make this their home office. I'm not clear about that, and that's something we'll want to ask him. He'd be here tonight, but he had to fly to Europe.
I'll look forward to hearing from him next week. I yield.
Any other discussion? We have before us a motion to table Resolution 8, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Resolution passes. Thank you, Mr. Lynn.
Thank you.
Next item of business, after which we will take a short break.
Resolution 9, 2019, approving the Redevelopment Commission's amending declaratory resolution and redevelopment plan and approving the Area Plan Commission order.
Petitioner.
Madam President, members of the council, my name is Lou Britton. I'm here representing the petitioner, the Redevelopment Commission. The purpose of this resolution is to authorize the amendment of the downtown plan to permit the Redevelopment Commission to acquire property within the TIF area. The bounds, the plan must specify a list of property that the Redevelopment Commission might acquire. Just because it's on the list doesn't mean they must acquire it. It just gives them the power to do so. This map outlines for you the boundaries of the property that are defined in the actual resolution adopted by the Redevelopment Commission.
Thank you.
The amendment to the plan has already been approved by the Redevelopment Commission. It has been approved by the Area Plan Commission last night. It has to now come before the for approval. Assuming the council approves it, There will be a public hearing conducted by the Redevelopment Commission at their meeting on the 19th. Notification of that meeting should be published tomorrow, assuming I don't, well, it's going to be too late to pull it now if it doesn't pass, I guess. Huh? Let's not be pessimistic. It's a technical requirement that you include a list of properties that you might acquire in your plan in order for you to be able to acquire them. Because of the changes to the way the process is going with the convention center, it's felt that the Redevelopment Commission might need to acquire some of these properties to be used primarily as parking facilities. So if there are any questions, I'll be happy to answer.
Is there any public comment on Resolution 9, 2019?
I went from positive to negative in those last words he said. I would like, Donald Hyde, I would like to remind the City Council that you've already approved one thing, and again, I urge you not to prolong hidden problems that are about to come and get you. You approved building this convention center, and when they build this convention center, they're going to take part of one of the state buildings that houses a lot of state office buildings. And these state office buildings are going to have to move somewhere else. Now, if we're lucky, and the state, mind you, is behind this, so they got the money, not us, they could build in some of the lots that are available in downtown Terre Haute state office buildings. You know, the unemployment office is going to have to be rebuilt somewhere. There's three or four other key buildings that are going to have, offices are going to have to go from that building somewhere else in the next 2 years, because they're literally going to take that building, empty it out, and then remodel it into a hotel. Unless I completely lost my ability to understand common sense, that's going to happen. Well, if you're going to do that, then you've got to watch how much land you take away from downtown Terre Haute, because every one of those offices are community center. In other words, you want to have those offices somewhere that the public can reach easily. Now, you got several places on 4th Street. That guy said, well, that Long John Silver place is. I got news for you. One of those state offices I hope builds where that Long John Silver was at 4th and Walnut or Ohio. That would be a perfect place for one or two of those offices to be built. And it would also put it by the government offices. In other words, you can take the city bus to downtown Terre Haute, or you could drive there. It would be easy for those people to go to the new place. Again, I urge you to consider what you're going to need in the next couple of years. You've already decided you're going to build this convention center, and you're going to make that office building that's five stories tall with at least four or five key state office buildings that are going to have to be replaced. Replace them or leave land so that they can be replaced in downtown Terre Haute, and we don't lose the convenience, the citizens don't lose the convenience of getting to the offices that they're going to keep using. I have no doubt in my mind that we're going to have to locate a new unemployment office somewhere. And I would prefer it being somewhere in downtown Terre Haute. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comment? Council? Questions or comments on this matter? We do not have to vote on this matter. It's a resolution.
So. Ms. President, if there's no further questions, I move that we pass Resolution 9, 2019.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Morris, seconded by Councilperson Nasser, that we approve Resolution 9, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Resolution passes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Britton. We will take a 7-minute break and come back and consider all the CFO forms. Okay. Okay, this meeting of the council is back in session. I'll just say for the benefit of the record that Councilperson Morris was not feeling very well and has taken his leave. So we'll go forward. Next item on the agenda, please.
Before you, should have a stack of CF1 forms. The first one is Providence CF1 for Resolution 13 of 2006. I believe all the information is included. They filled out the employee section and they filled out the cost and assessed value section. Just a reminder, this is a vote for in substantial compliance or not in substantial compliance. If you vote not in substantial compliance, you need to set it for hearing within 30 days.
Any questions or comments about
it's over with? 2007.
Did you have a question?
Isn't this over? It's 2007.
Oh, Mr. Felling.
It could be. It could not be.
Mr. Felling feels that.
There's no. My opinion is that there's no, even if it is over, there's no harm in finding it in compliance. That's all going to be handled on the county side. It's possible they didn't start it until afterwards because the project was delayed for whatever reason. Right. So there could be a year left.
A year left. Any other questions?
Excuse me. No. I move that we find Resolution 13-2006 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Azar, seconded by Councilperson DeBond, that we find Resolution 13-2006 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is found in substantial compliance. Then the next item of business.
The next one is Pyrolex CF1 Resolution 8-2017. There's a copy before you. You will find that they filled out Section 3, which is employees and salaries, incomplete, and they filled in Section 4. I don't believe there are any typos since Mr. Lynn did not help with this. I said I don't believe there are any typos because you did not help with this form.
Mr. Lind is here as Pyrolex's attorney and will attempt to answer any questions we might have about this matter. Are there any questions or concerns?
As a reminder, if you look at Section 2, actual completion date is August 21st, 2019, estimated. This project, I believe, had three or four stages, wasn't it? And they have not finalized every aspect of the project, but they do have part of it completed.
Yes,
Michelle, can you or maybe Eddie explain to us when the clock starts ticking on this, since we're being asked to find them in or out of compliance, but the project's not done?
I can answer that question.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Jeff Lynn, Lynn Law Firm. It's our 8th anniversary today. at least as to the real property, it will start. The first year is 2019 paid to 20. Personal property, I'll need to check with the Harrison Township assessor to see whether or not we submitted the, there's an additional form that says, okay, go start the clock. But frankly, as Earl pointed out earlier, all that was taxed on the personal property was 10% of the cost because it's not yet in use.
The short answer is I think that there's some control over those that own the project because some projects say, 3 or 4 years to get started. It doesn't make any sense. If you have a delay up front, you come and get one of these in the fall and you can't even start construction until September of the following calendar year. I don't know how long you can delay to start them, but I know you get to drive that bus to some degree.
Okay. If there's no further discussion, I move that we find Pirelux Resolution Number 8, 2017, in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation, seconded by Councilperson DeBond, that we find Pirelux Resolution 8, 2017, in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Resolution is in. Next item of business.
This is the second part of this Pirelux for CF1, Resolution 9, 2017. This is the real property abatement. Again, Section 2 is complete. Section 3 is complete for employee numbers and salaries. Section 4 they did complete as well. Estimated completion date is potentially August 21st of this year.
Are there any questions, comments?
Madam President?
Yes.
I move that we find CF1 Resolution 9, 2017 in substantial compliance.
Second.
Been moved by Councilperson DeBond, seconded by Councilperson Garrison, that we find Resolution 9, 2017 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The resolution is in compliance. Next item of business.
Tri-Aerospace.
Excuse me, I'm sorry, point of information. Congratulations, Mr. Land, on your 8 years.
How many years? How many years has it been?
You must have graduated from law school really late.
And Mr. Britton, you are out of order. Next item of business.
Tri-Aerospace, Resolution 4 of 2013, CF1 form. They did complete Section 3 for the employee and salary information, and they did complete Section 4 for cost and assessed value. It does appear they have more employees currently than they originally estimated.
Madam President?
Yes.
I move that we approve or find CF1 form RS4 2013 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Nation, that we find Resolution 19, 2017 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
I think resolution four, right?
I'm sorry. Did I say the wrong number?
It was in the wrong.
Resolution 4, 2013. I stand corrected. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is approved. Next item of business.
This is Tri-Aerospace, Resolution 19, 2017. If you will note in Section 2, the actual completion date is not scheduled until December 31st of 2020. The actual start date for the project was October 12th, 2017. They did fill out Section 3 for actual versus estimated employees and salaries, and they filled out Section 4 for cost and some of the assessed values. But I do not believe this project is complete.
Madam President?
Yes.
Michelle, did you say Resolution 17 or 19?
I might have said 17, but I meant 19. I apologize.
Okay. I didn't know if Chuck Ennis had worked on this, so I just wanted to double check. Find CF1 RS19 2017 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Haller, that we find Resolution 19 2017 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The resolution is found in compliance. Next item of business.
Tri-Aerospace CF1 Resolution 29 2012. This project shows that it was completed in June of 2013. They did complete Section 2, employees and salaries, and they completed Section 4 of cost and assessed value. This is a personal property abatement. They appear to have one additional employee than originally estimated.
Madam President?
Yes.
Looking actually at all these triennial space, I see the number of employees increasing and the salaries increasing. with that, CF1, I find RS-29, 2012, in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Aller, that we find CF1 RS-29, 2012, in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's found in compliance. Next item of business.
Thank you. Here, hold on. Say it.
Guru Krupa?
That was a test of the employee. I'm not sure how well he passed. Resolution 6, 2016. It shows the project completion date January 31st, 2018. They did complete Section 3, and they did complete Section 4. They're showing three additional employees than originally estimated.
Madam President?
Yes.
I need to recuse myself for conflict of interest with this vote.
Thank you, Councilman Nassar.
Madam President?
Yes.
I note that the estimated salaries on these, they estimated that they'd be roughly $14,743 per person. The actual is a little bit lower at $14,600. Despite that, the numbers are higher in both employees and estimated salaries. So I move that we find Guru Krupa Resolution 6, 2016, in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nassar and seconded by Councilperson Garrison. It's been moved by Councilperson Nation and seconded by Councilperson Garrison. Sorry about that. CF1 RS Resolution 6, 2016 be found in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It is found in substantial compliance. Next item of business.
GATX Corporation, and just for there are two of them. This one is Resolution 14, 2017. It is a personal property abatement.
Out of order.
They are showing that the project is not complete yet. Estimated completion date is December of 2020. They completed Section 3, and they have completed Section 4.
Any questions or comments from council or action?
Madam President?
Yes.
Since they are still not finished, but on the path to doing what they said they would do, I move that we find Resolution 14, 2017 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Nation, seconded by Councilperson Nassar, that we find CF1 Resolution 14, 2017 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Okay. Resolution passes. Next item of business.
GATX Resolution 15, 2017. The project is not completed. It's showing an estimated completion date of December 31st, 2020. They have filled out Section 3 and Section 4. Section 3, they are showing, again, the project's not completed, so the actual number of employees is lower than estimated.
Any council comment, question?
Madam President?
Yes.
I move that we find CF1 Resolution 15, 2017 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson DeBond, seconded by Councilperson Garrison, that we find CF1 RS-15-2017 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
It is found in substantial compliance. Next item of business.
Jagport, CF1, Resolution 5, 2015. The project is completed. They did complete Section 3 and Section 4. This is a personal property, I'm sorry, it is a personal property abatement. They completed Section 4 for assessed value, but not for cost.
Any questions or comments?
Madam President.
Yes.
Find RS-5, 2015, in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson DeBlon, that we find CF1 RS-5, 2015, excuse me, in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
It is found in compliance, in substantial compliance. Next item of business.
Jadcor, Resolution 19, 2011. It is a personal property abatement. The project is showing completed May 2012. They completed Section 3 for employees and salaries, and they did complete Section 4 for cost versus assessed value.
Any questions or comments?
Madam President?
Yes.
I move that we find Resolution 19, 2011 in substantial compliance.
Second.
It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson Aller, that we find CF1 RS-19 2011 in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It is found in substantial compliance. Next item of business.
McAllister, CF1 for Resolution 11, 2008. It is a real property abatement. Project was completed in 2012. They did complete Section 3 of employees versus salaries. There was a typo. Their totals aren't matching. And cost and assessed value, they did complete that section as well.
Is there any comment or question?
Michelle, can you tell us where the typo is?
So if you look under actual, that number should be the total number of employees in the first line where it says current number of employees.
Mm-hmm.
The number of employees retained should match what the SB1 stated for estimate, which in this case is 7.
Mm-hmm.
And then you subtract 7 from the total, and that should be the additional employees.
And they have 5 instead of 3.
No, you need to go to the other column, which says actual, because the first column is estimated on SB1.
Okay. So they have 11 instead of 3.
Which the 11 has got to be misleading, because that would be a very low salary.
Yes.
I just it's a pure typo. I think they meant to say they have 11 employees, and it's one additional.
I got you. I say that's an awful low salary for 11 employees.
Yeah.
Okay. Michelle, is there any way we can delay this a week and have them clarify that?
We can. I would like the city attorney to say if that's enough time to give them a chance to refile it. Mr. Felling?
Yes.
We have a tax abatement that has quite a few typos on it.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think it's enough time to table this until next Thursday?
Absolutely.
Okay, we do.
So table till next, what did we decide, the 13th?
Yeah.
Yeah. And this is 11. So, Madam President, I move that Resolution 11, 2008 be tabled until next Thursday, June 13th.
Second.
Been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson DeBond, that CF1 RS 11 2008 be tabled until June 13th, 2019. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Associated Physicians and Surgeons Clinic 3 LLC. This is a real property tax abatement. Shows that the project was completed March of 2013. They filled out Section 3 and Section 4. They are showing they have additional employees, but they did not show the salary of those additional employees.
Madam President,
yes.
I'd like to abstain from this vote. I think it's somehow connected to my current employment.
Thank you, Councilperson Garrison. Michelle, I'm a little confused. It appears to me that they're in Section 3, mm-hmm. that their actual employees are greater in number, but quite substantially less in salaries.
So if I was entering the information submitted, if the current number of employees is 258, mm-hmm. the number of employees retained should be 193, which is what was estimated on the SB1.
Right.
You subtract 193 from 258, 65. You get 65.
Right. I see that you get that, but I still don't see where this... where we have information that we can base the salary on.
Are you talking about where it says see attachment 2?
Well, maybe that's what I should be looking at. Thank you.
Now, that see attachment 2 was on the original SB1. You should have a copy of it. They stated estimate of employees and salaries as a result of proposed project. The facility will initially house and retain 33 physicians and 160 staff members. The current annual salary is $21.849 million.
We don't have that attachment, too.
You do?
We do not.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll make copies quickly. You can do that.
No.
Can we go to the next one and circle back?
Could we go ahead and go to the next one and then come back to this one?
Okay, so the next one is Unison CF1 Resolution 3, 2012. One moment, I grabbed the wrong one. Okay. It is a personal property abatement. They didn't complete the they did not enter a completion date in Section 2. I believe this project has been completed. They completed some of the information in Section 3, but they did not put the number of additional employees' salaries mm-hmm. under actual. I believe if you add number of employees retained under actual plus number of yes. additional employees, you should get the current number of employees.
Correct.
They did fill out part of Section 4, which was the as estimated on the statement of benefits form, but they did not put actual values.
Well, they did. It does appear to me, tell me if I'm reading this accurately, it does appear to me that they did hire more employees than they indicated they would initially on their estimates, and the amount that salaries had increased is above what they had originally estimated salaries would be, and it looks to me proportionally it's at least above that. Mm-hmm. Am I reading that correctly, do you believe?
Yes.
Thank you.
Madam President.
Yes.
I agree, and based on that, I'll move to approve Resolution 3, 2012, and find them in substantial compliance.
Second. It's been moved by Councilperson Garrison, seconded by Councilperson DeBon, that we find CF1 RS 3, 2012, in substantial compliance. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? It's found in compliance. Next item of business.
Do you want to go back to Associated Physicians and Surgeons?
Sure. what we would be looking at here then is attachment two.
Now, those attachments were on the original SB1. I'm waiting for my original back.
It's actually on there. There it is. It's the same thing. There's one attachment two down here. One of the benefits.
Two-sided copy.
So there is attachment number one, which is at Exhibit A. Ignore that. That's a legal description. Attachment number two is one that I originally started reading, which talked, again, this was from the original SB1. They were showing in 2001 they were going to get hire three new physicians, 2012, two, 2013, two more, 2014, two more, 2015, one more. And they stated that they received pension and comprehensive health benefits. So the C attachment 2 on the original SB1 is the form we just handed you to explain how they were going to increase the additional employees' salaries. But they did not put an actual amount for what they are being paid now.
Right. They also estimated, if I counted those up correctly, 30 new employees there. Two full-time staff positions for each of the physicians hired. 10 physicians hired, 20 staff people, 30 new people. But salaries are actually lower.
So they originally estimated 193 employees were going to be retained at $27.686 million. They have 258 currently total, but it's only $21.96 million.
Any comments or questions? Or do you need a little more time to look at it?
I'm still trying to understand it. It looks like the doctors all got moved out to someplace else and only the staff are left. But I'm sure that there's more of a story than that.
Some of them are underpaid.
Yeah. Well, yeah, all of them.
And to be more of the bearer of bad news, if you look under Section 4, the first section, as estimated on SB1, I do not have the, wait a minute, I do have the original SB1. Those numbers, even though they match for cost versus assessed value, that is exactly what they put on the SB1. The 18, under assessed value, they have 18 million as estimated on the original SB1. So those numbers do match in case anyone is concerned about that.
Madam President?
Yes.
The disparity between the estimated and actual salaries is so great in light of the much higher number of employees that I feel like I need more information before I can make a call on this. What are our options?
Scheduling for hearing?
I would suggest, since we're tabling one of these until next week, as opposed to not finding them in substantial compliance, possibly tabling it, giving them an opportunity so that we don't have to have, for example, one special call for just one of the. And then if they wouldn't show or you don't have your answer at that point, then you could find them not in substantial compliance at that juncture.
Thank you, Eddie. In light of that, I move that we table RS 4-2011.
Second.
It's been been moved by Councilperson Nation, seconded by Councilman Elliott, that we table CF1-RS4 2011 until June 13, 2019 for further explanation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So tabled. Next item of business.
I believe we are ready for Unison CF1 for Resolution 39-2008.
Yes.
They did not list a project completion date, but the original estimated completion date was, I'm going to assume 2009, and that's a typo because the project was supposed to start in November of 2008, and they show it completed of May 2008. They filled out the section for current number of employees versus their salaries and additional employees. They did, under actual, not include a number of additional employees, but they included the salary. But it's negative.
I was wondering about that.
Negative salary.
It works for negative salary.
And they did complete section 4.
I have before.
I'm not the company, so the city attorney may be upset for me saying this. This may be the one that they are moving the equipment. Do you remember from the previous years?
I don't know, but I think we're really at risk of losing our TV audience.
Madam President,
yes.
Michelle, you said you thought this might have been one that was moving employees.
I was hoping some of the other council would remember that there, for like the last 2 years, there was questions on why they have 7 employees, and they, I thought, came in to one hearing and said that they were moving the equipment from the Locust Street, I think it was, or is it up on, anyway, to here, and that's why.
Locust to 3rd.
Yeah, Locust to 3rd.
Eddie, Michelle, do you think it would be wise to maybe follow suit with the other two tables that we did for next week, maybe try and get an answer on this, if this is the one that's moving employees? That's up to you. I make a motion that we table this until next week.
See, that's the other thing. Curtis, I'll second that, but I know that the estimated start date was back in 2008, and you know that's we're 11 years in.
That's true.
The estimated completion date was May 31st of 2008, which
we don't have the actual date.
Right.
So on the personal property, that's not going to start until it's actually there and been assessed. So we don't know when it actually got there, we don't know when it actually started.
So it could have been a year later, and it could still be.
And it could be one more year left on the abate.
It could have been 3 years later.
And I think if we table it like you say, yeah, then that's the thing they need to answer next week.
Right, yeah. That's a reasonable question.
It's a reasonable question.
Negative salary number? I don't think that's too bad on any of these others.
It's not any more discussion. We do. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, and I think that's what we've been discussing here. It's hard for me to understand a start date of 3-1-2010 when the resolution was 2012-3.
That's the previous one for them. We'd already done that one. That was RS3 2012. This is 39.
I'm talking about RS3 2012.
Yeah, but that's not what's before us. We already approved. Found RS3.
Earl, they were out of order in your packet.
I missed that one.
We did that one while we were getting the documentation for the APNS one.
Okay. Well, and what did we do on that one?
We found it in substantial compliance.
Okay. Well, none of these dates and resolution numbers and section 4 is not complete and so on and so forth. I apologize for being asleep.
Okay.
I've got a feeling 8 of 7 of us are going to be following in a few minutes.
So we, just to clarify, we are currently on CF1 RS39-2008, which had a start date of
That's Locust Street, and they aren't out there anymore, I don't think.
It's not there.
3390 Locust Street. Mm-hmm. That's the piece of equipment or whatever has been, I think, has been moved.
Yeah.
And we're tabling it until
June 13th. Yes.
We haven't voted yet.
But it wasn't in the motion.
Yes.
Okay. Motion and second.
Yeah, Curtis made the motion. I made the second.
Yeah, it's been moved by Councilman Devine, seconded by Councilman Nation to table RS 39-2008. All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? It's tabled. Thank you very much. Okay, next item of business.
Review of Harrison CF1 Resolution 31-2014. That is a personal property abatement. I don't know where to start on this one. There's no completion dates. There's no actual salaries or number of employees. And there's no actual cost or assessed value in Section 4.
For members of council, at least mine were in opposite order in the packet, so if you're confused about no completion date, you might look at the one under the one. Yes, Councilor Pisnala.
Madam President, I'd like to move to table Resolution 31-2014, see if we can get some actual information on here.
Second.
Bill.
Been moved in.
June 13th.
It's been.
I have one question.
Yes.
The one we just dealt with was Resolution 39-2008.
Yes.
This one's Resolution
31-2008.
But they both have the same number. The personal property and the real estate both have 39-2008. Is that possible?
No. We got Resolution 3 and Resolution 39.
Yeah. On the unison, it was Resolution 3 and Resolution 39. On the Harrison manufacturing, it's Resolution 31, and the other one is 27.
Well, I have a 39 that's personal and a 39 that's real.
Okay. Somehow that's our fault. They became unstable. I send letters out in, each year to say you have a real property abatement, you have a personal property abatement. This company wanted to cover both bases and sent both forms, but only completed the one they needed, which is personal.
So this is?
Trash.
Trash?
But I have to retain it because they filed it.
Those were stapled together, weren't they? I thought they were. Mine were at least.
So they might have slipped through.
Element,
so I apologize for
okay.
not being
tabled
together.
All right. Thank you.
Okay, so refresh my memory.
Motion on the floor.
We made a motion to table.
We have a motion to table, which was seconded, I believe, by Councilman Devine.
I think you'll second it. I'll take the credit.
Okay, it's fine. If it's okay with you, let's go for it. Okay, so all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's tabled. Next item of business.
Okay, this is Harrison CF1 Resolution 27-2015.
Madam President?
Yes.
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion to table Resolution 27-2015 so we could get the correct information on it, too, because it's the same, kind of filled out the same way as Resolution 31. So just to get some clarification.
Second. It's been moved by Councilperson Aller, seconded by Councilperson Harrison, that we table CF1 RS 27-2015. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? It's tabled.
Anything else? I move to adjourn.
Second.
All those in favor? Adjourn.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed?